Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm in Houston, Texas, waiting my flight on Southwest Airlines here on my way to Burbank, California, which will be near Hollywood, California, where I will be performing at the close-up gallery at the Magic Castle all this week, and I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of friends, old and new, while that I'm there. It should be a lot of fun and full of surprises. Hopefully you guys will enjoy coming along for the ride, and it'll be a surprise then for you also as to what all we'll talk about and who we'll talk with while we're in the Los Angeles area. I know one thing that I want to do while I'm there is get my hair cut this Wednesday. Apparently Wednesday afternoon is the time whenever that the magicians get together over in Dean Dill's magic shop and barber shop. That's not a magic shop so much as it is, I guess, a barber shop. But he does have some things that are unique that he sells. Great guy, Dean Dill. And also, of course, we'll be having Magic and Martinis Thursday. And last year, when I was working at Magic Castle during June, I was joined by my friend Chris Korn for Martinis. So who knows who we'll hook up with to enjoy a martini with this week. So we'll see how that goes and who it might be. But for now, again, just hanging out in Houston at the airport, getting ready to head out, and got my Dunkin' Donuts and a cup of coffee. Gonna enjoy a little breakfast right here because it's about 6 o'clock. Yeah, pretty darn early. Here we go. All right, until I see you over on the other side, this is Scotty out. Hello, Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast, and I have arrived in Hollywood and got my papers and everything at the Magic Castle and just checked into the Nirvana Hotel. I'm here with the proprietor, the manager, Miss Sue Dion. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Yes. Good. And Sue, I understand this has kind of a interesting history for this building.
Oh, to say the least, yes.
Tell me something.
It was built in 1925 as a hotel by the world's first Asian-American movie star named Anna Mae Wong.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, that was before, what was the guy who...
Well, that was in 1925.
Okay, who was
2 years later, in 1927, her friend Sid Grauman thought the building was pretty neat, so he built around the corner the world-famous Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Right.
So the Chinese is actually based on this building.
Inspired and based on this building.
Yes, it is.
And so she lived here for a short time.
She did. Mm-hmm. And it was also run as a boarding house and an apartment building over the years. So with that comes a lot of history, and we're also a bit haunted.
Haunted. So people have died here and their spirits still linger.
Yes, and not just died, but the people that have come and go, there's a lot of residual energy. Uh-huh. And we've had mediums come in. They prefer to be called occupied. The
okay.
place isn't haunted, it's occupied.
I mean, seriously occupied? I mean, like a lot of spirits, or just one or two in particular, or?
Depends on where you are. The basement and the fourth floor seem to be a little more boogity than the rest of the building.
I thought that. Last time I was here and I went down to get to the laundry to wash it, I got a strange feeling down there.
Yeah. Yeah,
huh, okay.
They're a friendly bunch, though.
Sure.
They like it when people like the building, and I think they really love the magicians. So with magicians and ghosts, it's like Hogwarts here now.
Well, who were some of the people then who had come here, or maybe some of the more famous of the occupants?
Well, if you look up this building on the internet, you won't find much, and we don't have any of the stories like Marilyn Monroe slept here or anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This place has been pretty protected somehow despite its location.
Hmm.
The one story I do have, it was briefly owned in the 30s by Errol Flynn.
Hmm.
And Errol Flynn was a misogynist and a masochist, and he ran a members-only brothel.
Wow.
Out of here for approximately
out of here, out of this
year.
Building.
Yes, out
okay.
of this building. And he owned the building that was next door at the time,
mm-hmm.
and he built a tunnel, which is still in the basement, that went from the respectable building next door to
yeah.
this building. People would go into the nice building next door, come over here, do their business, and leave out the
And the so basement. If police were going to raid it, they had a kind of an escape route.
Oh, yes,
of,
they
okay.
did. Yeah, he was a crafty fella.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's probably the only thing we really have documented
yeah.
that Errol Flynn owned it for a little while. Yeah.
Now, you said you've had mediums or spiritualists who have come in here, and they've
yes.
what have they said or seen or found or heard? Or?
Well, the former owner that ran it as a boarding house who died in June 6, 1960 has been living in my apartment, which was her apartment.
Really? Have you ever seen her?
Oh,
or?
I didn't want to go in my bedroom for the first year and a half that I lived there. That's why I brought in the medium.
Did you see something or hear something?
Neither. I just never went into my bedroom, and if I did, I felt like I should just go in, do my business, and leave.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't feel like cold spots in the room or anything like that?
Other people did, and other people could see. A friend of mine named Ray, who can see spirits, saw her as clear as day, and then his description matched a second medium's description. Her name is Karen. Mm-hmm. She died of pancreatic cancer. I was getting her nausea while I was living in the...
Unbeknownst to whatever. You didn't know that she had passed that way.
No, not at all. So everything had put together, and once we sort of made peace with her, now she kind of helps me manage the building. She manages the occupied, and I manage the humans.
Now, that is great. The living.
Yes.
She handles those who are passed on.
Correct.
Interesting. Now, there are, what, four or six rooms that the Magic Castle has, or what?
Currently, they rent out four units as suites.
Okay. And they have a... kind of an interesting name. This one we're in right now, where I'm staying, is the Don Lawton Suite.
Don Lawton Suite. Suite 102 is named after John Calvert, who I believe is 105 and still living.
No, he just died this last year. Yeah.
Oh, he did.
Yes.
Oh, my
his spirit may be here.
It may be.
He was such a lovely, wonderful, caring man.
Heard the exact opposite.
Have you ever met him?
No, I've heard the exact opposite.
Really?
Yes.
He's been my guest in my home.
Oh,
I've never had anything.
Goodness.
Had never heard anything cross about.
Oh, usually when people go into the John Calvert Suite, the first thing they say is, "Oh, that was one son of a bitch." But
wow,
maybe it was a term of endearment. I don't know. Then we have the Charlie Miller Suite.
Okay, that's on the fourth floor.
Yes, that's on the fourth floor, and 410. The Billy McCombs Suite.
Okay,
is 410.
Now, are they similar to this? Are they a suite? I mean, this has a kitchen and a dining room, a bedroom, and
they're similar. They have different decor. This was the last one that they bought, and but the others have hardwood and a few more pictures and this and that. So, have you been in any of those?
I've not. I stayed here last year in this same room. So
we'll have to bring you into John Calvert Suite so you can say hello, just in case.
I would
hanging
like
around.
To do that. Now, who's staying here this week? You know,
you'd have to ask Jack Goldfinger.
Okay,
or whoever you're dealing with.
Yeah,
Trish.
Jack. Mm-hmm.
Trish or Jack.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will, because I'm. She told me who was staying in each of them. I think Bob Cassidy is staying there, which is interesting, too.
It's
do you know Bob
one.
Cassidy?
No, I don't.
He is a mind reader and a mentalist, and he does seances.
Ooh.
And so I might kind of go and hang out with him. That might be kind of interesting to do a chat with him in the room.
And there's a lot of great... They didn't know that they were going to do more units. At first, they just wanted one, because before the Magic Castle started staying at the Nirvana, they were renting out one room a week at the Magic Castle Hotel, which is neither owned nor affiliated with the Magic Castle.
Hmm.
So they were paying a fortune to have one performer come.
Right.
Now that they're here, they can now afford to have four performers.
So they actually own this, like as a condo, basically?
No,
they
lease this is an apartment building.
So they lease by
They're leasing apartments.
By the month?
Just by the month.
Okay.
They pay it just as like any other tenant. But
it's still cheaper than a hotel over here.
Mm-hmm. And they keep it like a hotel.
Right.
Yeah. They're a class act over there. They really are.
They certainly are. And Jack Goldfinger's a great guy. He's got a lot of things. I'm sure he's great to work with from you.
How can you not love a man who answers his phone? How can I make your day a better day?
Instead of saying hello,
Yes.
He is great.
Yes.
Back on haunted history around this area. Now, I asked you earlier about Janis Joplin, but you said actually it was the Highland Gardens where she died.
Right around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd stayed there a time or two way back years ago before they had, the rooms, of course, they put up. And was there anybody else in the Highland Garden? I mean, is that the only celebrity
That's
death that you
the
know?
The only celebrity one. There's a lot of activity over there almost every weekend because it's rented out by younger kids as a pool,
Right,
so
I
the
remember.
Police are called there quite often. But
okay.
Janis Joplin's the only celebrity.
But down on the street, is there a hotel where John Belushi had
That's the down on Sunset. That's the Chateau Marmont. But right at the end of the street is the Hotel Roosevelt. And if you're looking for haunted history, that's a good place to start.
What about it?
Oh, God, I don't even know if I could list everything that's happened there.
Okay.
That may be the hotel where Fatty Arbuckle murdered someone. I'm not sure. But tons of, all the old people, all the old, Charlie Chaplin,
Early
Marilyn
Monroe,
everybody. And the first Oscars were actually held at the Hotel Roosevelt in a very small ballroom.
And that's down on Franklin?
If you go out and right to the bottom of Orange and Hollywood,
okay.
You will walk right into the hotel if you cross the street.
Oh, because so kind of catty corner from the Chinese Theater?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Which also, I think it's interesting that on the Hollywood Walk of Fame there, that they've got a star of Houdini and David Copperfield, I think, right down at the...
Oh, is that where they
are? On the T over there, too, where it... Where the two streets collide. Well, interesting. Anything else about the this history-wise that might be of interesting note that you can share?
At this point, no. But if I can think of something else,
you'll get back to me.
I will.
I'll be here all week.
You will be here all week. Yes, wonderful to meet you, Scott. Thank
you. So, you know, let me ask you also that now you've been doing this for how long here?
4 years
as a manager. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. Now, I usually interview just magicians or magicians' assistants. Mm-hmm. Once I spoke, with a lady who was running a chocolate shop because I love chocolate, and so different places I go, and a museum curators and things. So, I'd ask you, what is your magic word? Not necessarily like abracadabra. But what do you live by? What is a motto, something that's important to you? It could be a phrase even, not necessarily just a word. What's important to you? What is?
Be kind.
Kind. Be kind. That's great. Mm-hmm. Love to hear that. That's mm-hmm. good. Sue, thank you very much.
Thank you,
that
Scott.
Was Sue Dion with the Nirvana Apartments here in Hollywood, California.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And for the Magic Word podcast, this is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and this is Monday night, my opening night. I haven't gone into the close-up gallery to perform yet. It's still early, but I'm here with my friend Joan Lawton. Hello, Joan.
Hello.
So glad to see you here, and also at the castle kind of hanging out, you know. Now, I mean, what's interesting is I'm staying in the Don Lawton suite. You do every night.
I've heard of him, yes. I used to every night.
Used to every night.
Yes.
Okay. And so now you're in the Joan Lawton suite, I guess, all
yes.
the time. That's right. And so you have been a member, I overheard you say, for over 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
You're one of the original members, I assume.
No, I'm not.
Castle.
No. No, but I have a three-digit membership number.
One of the...
A low three-digit membership
yeah.
number. But, no, I joined... Oh, when did I join? I think in January of 64.
Okay. Wasn't that long ago for those of us who have been around for a while. That and you have... you had a lot of stories, I'm sure, with Don, but were you a magician then also, or how did you actually come to meet
Don? No, I had never seen a magician in my life except Harry Blexton Sr.,
mm-hmm.
whom I saw at the Albee Theater in Cincinnati
oh, okay.
when I was a kid. And I thought he was the only magician I'd ever seen. Then I got to be friendly with Danny Dew, and he would describe
yeah.
acts to me that used to play the nightclubs in Northern Kentucky. And I realized, oh, yeah, I did see other magicians.
You were just thinking of a stage magician. You really hadn't thought about
right.
the close-up
no,
guys.
No, I never did. And then well, the first night that I came here, Harry was here.
Really? Senior?
And, senior.
Okay.
And then we got to be friends, and I used to take him shopping. And
what did he buy? What kind of shopping? I mean, like grocery
shopping?
The
grocery store,
okay.
yeah.
Okay. Did he like meat? He wasn't a vegan or anything, was he? Or
not that I remember.
I just wonder.
It was a long time ago.
When he used to go shopping with Harry Blackstone Sr. That's an interesting
yeah, that
story.
That was fun, and I spent a lot of time in the lobby here at the castle.
Yeah.
10 and a half years. And that was fun because I was here through the real celebrity years, you know, the
yeah.
Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart, Joan Bondell, Carl Malden, those
Johnny Carson,
celebrities.
Yeah,
Johnny Carson and Dick Cavett,
yeah.
Orson Welles.
Cary Grant was someone I always wanted to meet. Never had the opportunity. What was
I've
like?
Been wined and dined and
oh
hugged
my.
And kissed by Cary Grant.
Lucky girl.
Yes, sir. You could say that.
Yeah.
He was just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
He would sit in the lobby with me when he was dating Diane Cannon because she was always late.
Mm-hmm.
And
did she marry Burt Reynolds? Or she?
I don't think
she,
so.
Was she dating?
No, I don't. I don't
okay.
know.
Okay.
I don't follow
way
that
back. Well, yeah.
Stuff.
Okay.
But we would sit out there, and I was getting a special teaching certificate, and he was interested in what I was doing, so we'd sit out there and chat. And every time a car pulled up, which wasn't so often in those days,
yeah.
He'd get up, open the door, bow, good evening,
really?
Welcome to the Magic Castle. And these women would just die.
It's like you're being welcomed
yeah.
into his place.
He was just wonderful, wonderful man.
It's interesting that he would take such... an interest in the club, you know. I mean, as he was the president at the time, or just a member?
No,
or?
He was on the board of directors, but he wasn't. Bill Larson was still president.
Okay, so it wasn't until after Bill died that I think, was Cary Grant then the next?
No. After Bill, I think, might have been Mark Wilson, might have been.
Okay.
Don't remember. But now we have another Larson as president, which is great.
And we have had other celebrities, certainly as members right now with Neil Patrick Harris.
With Neil, Johnny Depp comes here pretty frequently.
Oh, does he?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I had heard or read something.
And, of course, Michael Carbonaro, now a star on True TV. It's a great show. Watch it, The Carbonaro Effect.
Is that what it's called, The Carbonaro Effect?
Okay. My little plug for a good friend.
I had read where Johnny Depp may be considered for an upcoming Houdini movie, possibly.
I read that, too, and I don't know. And Hugh Jackman is on line to possibly do a Broadway show about Houdini.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't know if that'll happen or not.
Now, going back to some of the in the heyday when it was a lot different, when there were more celebrities here, were there not as many members back then? And that's why I said that not a lot of cars drove up. I mean,
were not a lot of, not as many members.
So were a lot of the members magicians and or celebrities mainly?
They were, the ones who came here a lot were, yes. Mm-hmm. There was a whole group, Bill Derman, Lou Derman, Heiberg, Joe Berg, Jim Cooper, Jan Grippo. Mm-hmm. All those guys used to come in.
Yeah.
A whole lot. You know, Jimmy Grippo would come when he was in town.
Yeah.
And they hung out here all the time.
And who impressed you? Who do you remember? What kind of an act kind of sticks in your mind?
Hmm. Well, I was always in the lobby then, so I didn't get to see so much because I was the only receptionist. Now there's a couple of them, and they take breaks, and they can do things. But I was out there the whole night.
Mm-hmm.
So the What I remember from being in the lobby is Jules Lanier, David Ross, and Jeff Altman used to come out into the lobby late at night and serenade me with air instruments.
Air instruments?
Air instruments. Pretend they just...
Oh, okay,
you know.
Okay.
So that was always fun because I just adored them. And Senator Crandall.
Mm-hmm.
The shows of his I was allowed to see. He used to do these midnight shows. I was never allowed to see those.
They're like stag shows or something?
I guess.
Okay.
I don't know. I just never... I guess they thought I was too innocent at the time.
And you were married to Don for...
Not long enough. Not long enough. We lived together for a couple years and...
Mm-hmm.
When I wanted to get married, he didn't want to, and when he wanted to get married, I didn't want to. And one day, it was my nephew's 11th birthday, and I'd completely forgotten it. So I said, I think I'll call Andrew and tell him he's getting you for an uncle, and that'll be his birthday present. And Don said, okay, let's go do that. And so we did, and that's how we got engaged.
And so you got married. What was your wedding date?
I should know that, shouldn't I?
It's okay, I don't remember mine exactly.
November, I think it was November 14th, 1984.
Okay. And then, I know he was then the host here for most of the time. Did he ever perform much? I mean, I remember in his early years he did, but did he do close-up and everything here as well?
He didn't do as much close-up as he did. He loved the parlor.
Oh.
That was his favorite room to work.
Mm-hmm.
Same words as he did on stage.
What was in his set? You remember what part of his tricks were that were in his set?
Well, I know I don't look anything like a magician, and by the time I'm through, I think you'll think I'm anything but a magician. But one thing I know, they say the hand is quicker than the eye. I don't know who they are, but that's what they say. I saw his show so many times, I know it all.
Memorized it all.
Yeah. He did a callback to a cane through the whole show, a Walsh cane, until it vanished. Of course, at the end, mutilated parasol, torn and restored napkin, Clippo.
Mm-hmm.
He was very big on Clippo. I don't know. I'd have to see the tape again. It's been a while.
Yeah, but it was a...
But he also did really good close-up.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't like it as well as stand-up.
You think it was because... He could entertain more people at one time in a parlor show than he could in a close-up show, or what do you?
No,
did he ever tell you why?
I think that when he worked the parlor, he had a bigger chance to interact with the audience.
Okay.
And he loved that. Oh, Dissecto, that's another thing he did.
Mm-hmm.
I gave his Dissecto to Chuck Fain, so it's in Australia.
In Australia
now.
That's right. Now, he had a kind of a pamphlet or a newsletter he put out, I remember years ago, called Lines from Lawton.
Yes.
Were you involved with that at all, or was
no.
that pre?
I was too young.
That was before you, okay.
That was. He was quite a bit older than me.
I think that was...
But his whole family helped with that.
Okay.
His first wife and their 8 kids, they did it all. And then after Don and I got together, then we did new Lines from Lawton.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did, after he passed, and I found the autograph book, didn't know what to do with it for years. And I showed it to John Gaughan, mm-hmm. and I said, what should I do with this? He said, just take it to magic conventions and let people drool over it. But I was sitting in Norm Nielsen's living room, and he was looking at it, and that's when I got the idea for the autograph book.
And did Norm actually publish the book?
No, I published it.
You did yourself. Mm-hmm. Okay. And for those who might be interested in wanting to purchase a copy, where could they go to find one?
I still have a few. They can email me at jlawton@magiccastle.com.
Okay.
That'll bounce to my private email, and mm-hmm. I'll respond.
All right. And how much do the books run, plus shipping?
I don't know what shipping is now,
yeah.
because
yeah.
it's...
It goes up all the time.
You know, I think I turned around and it went up $1, so I don't know. I'd have to find that out. It's $40
okay.
plus shipping.
And just some of the people who have signed that, I mean, like Harlan Tarbell and others.
Doc Tarbell, Del O'Dell, Silent Mora, Senator Crandall, Vernon, of course, Jack Wynn.
A lot of the guys. And so it has not only their signatures.
He kept the autograph book in the magic shop that he had in St. Louis, and every time magicians would come in or come in for mm-hmm. a convention, then he would have them sign. So,
yeah.
And I just picked the ones that were the most interesting. And
right. And there's a little story about each of them.
There's a little story. I found a handwriting analyst in Washington State,
huh.
and who knew nothing about magic, nothing. I went to great lengths to do that, and she works for the courts and for private businesses up there, and she did, you know, a quick analysis of all the handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
The most fascinating one to her was Okito.
Now, so she analyzed it to say that they had some sort of a personality,
mm-hmm.
or what? Okay.
And then I had Jay Marshall and Carl Ballantyne mm-hmm. read a bunch of them because they knew all the people
sure.
to find out how accurate she was, and they mm-hmm. said she was right on.
Wow, interesting.
So
they knew
I have
personally,
to believe
sure.
those two.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, well, that's interesting. Well, thank you, Joan, very much. I appreciate getting to chat with you about this. I know that a lot of listeners out there will enjoy, you know, getting to hear, you know, some of Lines from Lawton from you then as well. So thank you very much. Now, let me ask you one thing. To wrap up, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and so I always like to conclude by asking my guests that what is your magic word? It could be, I don't mean necessarily like abracadabra, it could be something that would be like your motto, something that's important to you, something that you live by. What is
serendipity.
It? Ooh, that's a good one. I like that. Serendipity.
Yep.
So it is. That was Joan Lawton. It's quite serendipitous. For the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out. All right, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm on the second day of my week at the Magic Castle here. And had a great audience last night, several audiences, all 4 shows. It was a lot of fun. And then afterwards, I went to the stage show that had Rob Zabrecki as the host or MC. He did a great job on the show. And then after that, I read it with him. He had Tina Leonard and Arden James. What was kind of cool was it was Rob's birthday. And so afterwards, after the last show, he had cupcakes and everything, and that was kind of cool to see a bunch of folks who'd come in, you know, Mike Caveney and Christopher Hart and several other guys. So it was fun just to hang out and talk with some friends. But I probably should have pulled out the microphone to record just a few chats. But it was kind of hectic and a lot of fun. But we're relaxed here on Tuesday morning, and I'm here with my good friend that you guys have heard before. You can hear him again all the way from Spain. Please welcome Rafael Benatar. Hey, Rafael.
Hey. Good morning.
Good to have you back again, and good. And so I wanted to ask you about how your week has been. You know what? Because you were working close up last week, and then this week you're working.
I had a blast at the close up gallery.
Yeah.
Sharing the close up gallery with my buddy Camilo.
Yes.
And
now Camilo also was a student of Ascanio, wasn't he?
Oh yes, mm-hmm. Yes, and he was one of the original founders of the Escuela Mágica de Madrid, along with Ascanio and Tamariz and a couple more people.
Yeah, and is he still teaching there at the Escuela?
No, it's not what it was.
No,
the Escuela has never been
a teaching school.
It's a school of thought.
Oh, school of thought. Okay.
Yeah, that communicates through a newsletter, and there is a gathering once a year, the famous Escorial gatherings. Yes.
Now, when they have the gatherings, are they just for the people
who are members?
Yeah.
Sort of. Yes.
So it's not like somebody. It's not like a convention that everybody in the world is invited. No, kind of a thing.
Nobody pays registration, and nobody's hired to lecture.
Huh.
It's a friendly gathering, invitational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And is it all strictly cards and coins and close up? And
That one gathering is strictly cards.
Just cards only.
The escuela itself encompasses all of magic.
Okay.
And relations to Elliot Arts, and you know, in the newsletter you might publish an article about your thoughts about art or stuff like that,
yeah,
or anything that is intellectually interesting,
right?
But the Escorial gatherings are exclusively card magic.
Wow! Now, do people hold back some of their ideas and then share them at that conference, or?
Well, yes, occasionally, but sometimes. You provide your own ideas, but also we can use from whatever is there. Say we'll do one year, for example, the rising cards.
Okay.
So
it'll be a theme of some sort.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and that's an example, the rising cards. So what they do is, aside from your own ideas, something you can think of.
Right.
We divide by groups, and we learn to perform whatever is printed out there,
mm-hmm.
And so by the time you see it all, you get a good picture. If you want to put together a routine, you see a lot of samples, you see what's here, what's there,
sure.
What's available, all
right.
The resources, gives you a very good overview.
That's a great idea.
So I will encourage you, encourage any group of magicians, mm-hmm. say six guys get
right.
together.
Right.
They don't have to be particularly knowledgeable. Just six guys that have a serious interest
right.
in magic, and they meet every Thursday or whatever.
Right.
So, take a book,
mm-hmm.
and each learns a chapter, and you get together and perform and exchange ideas, give each other feedback, or take a subject, ambitious card.
Right.
You find everything you can, and you know. And that's a way to.
That's a great idea. You know,
learn resources.
The first thing that came to mind, you know, I've been doing a Bill and Lemon, like everybody, probably forever. And there are so many different ideas and performances and lines and ways of preparing the bill or not the bill or the lemon or not the lemon or whatever kind of a thing. And that'd be fantastic, you know, to have something that is just a subject and actually have a weekend or at least a day-long conference where everybody brings in their ideas.
I'll give you some of the formats we have used. It's changed over the year, but there was a nice period that I like where we had, for every gathering, we had a type of trick, like say, card to impossible location.
Yeah.
Or rising cards, or ambitious cards. Then another subject would be a particular book, the Leipzig book, the LePaul book.
Okay.
So everybody learns the book. And then they provide their own ideas. But other than that, it's just presenting the material that is in the book so everybody can see. So
kind of like a book club in a way,
I guess. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But you have to practice and learn and prepare.
Sure.
And then also a move. In the same gathering,
mm-hmm.
this year is the double leaf, next year is the pass.
Yeah.
Like that.
Huh. Now, how many years have they been doing this?
over 30.
And so I assume it's all Spanish-speaking people? I mean, it's just in your area? Or?
No, there's a bunch of Americans.
Oh, do they?
There are brilliant magicians from all over the world.
Yeah.
And sometimes we translate because everybody speaks English, so sometimes I translate or sit with a group and translate for them.
Yeah.
But we've had, well, among the people who come every time are Magic Christian from Austria, the author of the Great Half Sister
Magic Christian,
books.
Right.
Yes, we have from the United States, we have David Solomon, Steve Bean, we have Paul Wilson, sometimes the German guys, you know, Jörg Alexander, Stefan Kirschbaum, Pete Hartling, or some Aurelio Paviato from Italy, Roberto Giovi from Switzerland. Those are the regulars that belong in the group.
Yeah.
And you'll be amazed.
Those pretty high-powered guys.
You see 30 people, and you'll be amazed how many books they have published and how many awards they've won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh. And so how far in advance do you notify these guys? I mean, you tell them like 6 months in advance, hey, this, or that year to year, say next year when we come back, it's going to be on...
The subject.
The subject. How do you...
It's decided
each
for 1 year. At the end of the conference,
the
Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Juan Tamariz writes it in a board. Sometimes we vote. Sometimes he just decides.
Sure.
And you take a picture of the board. And that's it.
Now, how many people attend that?
About 30.
And
maybe.
Have you ever published results, books, or, I mean, as a result of that somebody says, okay, we're going to come up with these ideas, and here's going to be a compilation?
Oh, yeah. So every time we do a compilation of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the copies, we distribute them to friends.
Yeah.
And also, there is the newsletters.
Yeah.
Are, well, published with quotes. Just photocopies with a staple.
Yeah.
That we're not doing the newsletter anymore, but the newsletter are all in a library to be consulted.
Mm-hmm.
And there's...
Where's the library?
Oh, it's a library in Madrid. There was an old-timer of the Magic Club, Mr. José Puchol. He had the best library in Madrid.
So we have the number 5.
I'm the number 5, okay.
You're the number 5.
Yep.
Was this a regular coffee or a special?
It's a regular coffee, okay. Yes. Thank you. Sorry, we're taking just a quick break over here for lunch. All right. Well, we were still here at brunch and got a little bit distracted as they brought our sandwiches. That was mine was a pastrami and Reuben. You had the pastrami, huh?
I had the Reuben.
You had the Reuben?
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
That was really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, we're here at Greenblatt's Deli here in LA. So it was. Very, very good. So, try and pick up where we left off. And I think we were talking about that you said that you put together some compilations that are just kind of newsletters of the effects that, you know, once that you decide what your subject was. And then, is that something that's sent out, like, after that you have, after the conference is over? Or?
No, people prepare before.
They send it in advance.
Some people write stuff for others to share. More and more with the progress of digital technology, that is changing shape. Mm-hmm. Now, I think next year is going to be email, but some people prepare. They write an essay on one of his subjects
right.
They studied. Reinhard Müller from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
He had a very good database, and he always prepared a nice booklet about something. A few years ago, he stopped coming. But he still does the thing and sends it.
Hmm.
So every year for the last 30 years, there's an interesting book written by Reinhard Müller.
And
by other people.
That is on that particular subject for that.
Also, I was telling about this library.
Yes.
José Puchol is a man who passed away like maybe 10 years ago.
From Spain?
Yes, and he had the best library in Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
Tamariz used to read in his library when he was young. He had magic books.
Right.
And he was one of the founders, one of the main forces behind the Escuela Mágica de Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to meet him, spend a lot of time with him.
Yeah.
I had a good connection here because he was also a music lover and very knowledgeable of magic. And he wrote an essay about how to invent a trick, and he wrote something about the Boitier de Colta die, and that kind of thing. So when, since his sons were not interested in magic, he decided to donate the library. But he said if he donated this to a magic club, the books will disappear.
That's true.
So he donated it to a foundation, a very serious foundation, Juan March, a very serious foundation.
And they have a permanent facility where the books can be checked in and out or something?
You can take books home.
So it's kind of like a Magic Castle library. You can only see them there. You can't take them out.
Yes. But they have a very good database, and you're allowed a certain number of photocopies. Everything is legal.
Oh, that's nice.
Maybe 10 pages of a book, but no more, stuff like that.
Right.
And they take really good care, and they committed, when Puchol donated it, they committed to keep updating the library. So I'm their consultant.
Oh.
I tell them what books to buy.
Oh, so they're always buying new books, you know, adding
every year they add some.
So they have some money to donate towards or to purchase certain books.
Yeah, but you know what's difficult for a library like that?
They've
changed librarians. That library is part of a larger library they have. They have a library of contemporary Spanish music of course.
Right.
And they have a theater library. Very good. Okay. Now, since you can take books home.
Yeah.
So, what would they do with a biography or a book like, you know, thick biography, Carter the Great?
Yeah.
So, I try to order the books that are important for a library to have.
Right.
But one of the persons there say, well, people who come here to read, they want to read tricks.
That's interesting.
And it's
they don't want to know the history. They want to learn tricks.
No. People, if you want to, if you're interested in history and you can't take the book home, well, you buy the book. But who's going to go to a library to read a biography? How many times you have to go? See?
Yeah.
So it's I still order the books that I think are important.
Right? Yeah, well, that's interesting. You know, I've got a lot of books in my library. Thank you. A lot of books that are on history, and I've got everything that Mike Caveney's published. You know, because he's got
all those are fantastic.
They are. You mentioned Carter for an example, but all the rest of those that he's got. I mean, I've gone back to the first one, you know, Walter Jean's Illusioneer, you know, and had all those, and I read them and just devoured them. I love reading about history because I think it's important if we recognize where we're from, we know where we're going.
Of course, you know. Of course. Nobody questions that. But I understand what this woman says. They have people who come, stay 2 hours, and read.
That makes sense.
Carter's biography.
Right.
You have to go 40 times.
You're right. It's a big book, and you're just going to be kind of going back. Well, do they have like a coffee shop or something where you can actually sit and...
Not a coffee shop, but they do have a pleasant place to sit and read.
Relax and read or something like that.
And I told them to subscribe to the magazines because that keeps the thing moving. Keeps people coming to see what's in Genie, what's in...
Right. Do you have a membership in Ask Alexander? You know, that's a good database with history and everything.
Well, that's the sort of thing I would do, but I don't have it now because the last few years I haven't had time to read what I have. But you know, I might.
Yeah.
That's an incredible resource.
It is incredible.
Do you have a membership?
I did have membership, and I've let it lapse. And I've enjoyed, you know, what I've seen in there, and it's certainly good for anybody who's going to be researching anything, you know, that if they want to go back and find out the genesis of certain thing, or they're writing a book and want to find out if something has been published. There was something for an example that was funny. Steve Cohen had called me some time ago and said I was reading, I think, you know, in Ask Alexander, where that you had published a reference to Max Mellini belonging to the Friars Club here in New York. And he said, "Do you know where that you got that?" He said, "Because I have researched that and I can't find any other reference to it." And I'm sure I didn't make it up, and I still, to this day, I've gone back and I've looked up all my resources to see where I had gotten that. Or it could be that someone like Vernon or someone may have told me that, you know, in passing, but it's not written down. And and because I can't find the reference, you know, to it at that point. But
yeah.
But my point is that, you know, you can find about anything that you want, it seems like, in that.
But now, one interesting thing that many people can, for those who speak Spanish among the listeners.
Yeah.
That book contains an important number of ancient books, ancient Spanish books.
Yeah. Were there a lot of Spanish, I should say, magic books written in Spanish?
Oh, yes, many. Mm-hmm. And starting in 1733.
1733?
Yes.
Okay. Can you be more specific? Like, was it March?
Pablo wow. Minguet.
Okay.
So
it's kind of like we're familiar with the original Scott's discovery of witchcraft, that yours was...
Yeah.
Was that one? Mm, okay.
Yeah. So the thing is, they scanned all those books and made them available to anyone who wants to read them.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to access the site.
Yeah.
And you look at any book and start flipping.
Yeah. And that's available.
So they scan all the books that are old enough not to have a copyright.
Right. And where is that available? That's not the Conjuring Art Society. That's the
No, it's a Spanish foundation.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't have the exact link right now, but the foundation is called Fundación Juan March.
Okay. And is it specifically for magic books?
Biblioteca de Ilusionismo. No, Library of Illusions.
Okay.
So if you... I give you some keywords. If you say... Juan, like Juan Tamariz,
yeah.
Juan.
Yeah.
Mark, which is like March.
M-A-R-C.
Juan March, C-H.
Okay.
Fundación stands for foundation.
Okay.
Fundación Juan March. And then you might type biblioteca, which is library,
mm-hmm.
Ilusionismo. Those five words will get you
those
there.
Those keywords on the Google search will get
yes.
you to that.
And then you will see... Mm-hmm. The cover of each book, and simply click on one and start flipping the pages.
Yeah,
wow. Very readily.
All in Spanish. Those are all Spanish books. Not
maybe there is an ancient book in English or two, because he had a lot of English books in his library, of course. But he's particularly interested for Spanish readers. I'm sure there are some people in Texas.
Interesting. Going back to the Magic Castle here this week. So you were working. In close-up last week, in the parlor this week, and then you lectured on Sunday, and this last Sunday. And so you have lectured, this was your third year of lecturing, and you were nominated for Lecturer of the Year 3 years ago?
2 years.
2 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when you were performing in close-up, what number of times, how many times have you performed here?
Well, I have performed at least 2 weeks every year since 1997.
Okay. And you do a different show every
and
time?
And some years I've performed. Oh, no. I do basically... Well, I've changed over the years, but I do basically the same show, maybe add a trick or change a little something.
Mm-hmm.
The parlor show has become tighter, you know, the last couple of years. It's an act.
What's in your set? What's in the? I'm going to go see it tonight. I missed it last night. But what?
Well, two of the tricks you've seen in my lecture.
Okay.
You remember?
Well, not everybody who's listening would.
Yeah.
Not everybody who's listening to the podcast would remember. So.
Well, you have a set of lecture notes called Parlor.
Yes.
Called Parlor.
Okay.
So the first and last tricks from there are in the act.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a mental routine. And I do a routine about estimating the number of cards by weight.
That's a great trick.
Yes.
Now, what's the name of the gentleman who came up with that? Because you taught me that, too, and I did that for the longest time.
Oh, that's probably very old, but this is Miguel Gomez's version.
It's
a friend of mine.
It's a great idea. So, you can estimate, and by estimation, tell what their card was that they had selected or taken out. It's a cool trick. So you've always worked 2 weeks. You always worked then. Have you ever worked in the palace, or has it always been just a close up in parlor?
Well, I usually do two back-to-back weeks,
mm-hmm.
which is close up and parlor.
Mm-hmm.
But occasionally we have done 6 Spanish weeks at the Castle that I put together myself. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, I put 2 guys in close up, 2 guys in parlor, and I MC the palace.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy it. It's similar to the parlor, but it's slightly larger. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And I might want to do it again, even if it's not Spanish week, just MC the Palace.
Yeah. I think that'd be fun. I would like to MC the Palace sometime. In fact, I had suggested to Jack Goldfinger a while back of having a Houston, Texas week. I mean, we could do Texas, but we got enough guys, you know, in Houston, I think, that we could put together a pretty good show with, you know, with illusionists and mentalists and everybody we've got around and close-up guys, you know, I think it would be just a lot of fun. And so they do have themed weeks like that. I think they've had other kinds of, not just all Spanish week, but other kinds of themed stuff then as well. And so from here, are you going to be heading back to Spain, or you got some other work here locally in the U.S.?
I'm going to, for a few days, to Miami and meet my father and my brothers. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to a small convention in Canada. And after that, I'm doing some lectures up the East Coast, ending in New York.
And are you going to be doing Monday Night Live while you're out there?
Yes.
Okay.
Monday Night Magic, yeah.
And we, live, Monday Night Magic. And when are you be doing that? What's the date? June what? Do you remember the date?
Monday Night Magic is June 30th.
13th?
It's a Monday. 30th.
30th, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So hopefully...
For those listeners from New York, yes.
Right. That you'll be out there.
You can see it in MondayNightMagic.com.
Okay. And do you know who else is going to be on with you?
Yes, I think it's Jeff Moshe. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Moshe.
Moshe, yes.
Yeah. Jeff Moshe.
Yes. And I think Todd Robbins was working, but there, I think there was a change that he could do, so I don't know if it's the other person.
Mm-hmm. And you've worked out there before, haven't you?
Yes, many times, but it's been a while.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I was last out.
They moved several times, and I worked in several locations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whenever I last worked there, was in their first location where the Fantastics used to play.
Oh, the Sullivan Theater. Sullivan Street Playhouse.
Yeah,
that was it. I did that.
You worked there
times.
Also?
Yeah.
I kind of like that theater. Kind of, it wasn't in the round, but you were surrounded, you know, certainly on your sides and everything. It was challenging, but a lot of fun, you know, certainly. Well, very cool. Anything else new that you're working on or excited about? That I mean, as far as your...
Well,
new card work or a new book or anything?
Well, I'm developing some stuff that so far is in Spanish because it has to do with play with words.
Yeah, and it doesn't
it's
translate.
Something I started as a hobby and then I think I can use it in tricks.
Yeah.
Like hiding words within a text, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now... And to briefly finish over here, I know that you have other passions that you enjoy playing tennis, you say a lot, as well as playing the, not the guitar, what is it that you're playing?
The lute.
The lute, that's right, playing the lute. And you're practicing that on a regular basis, or do you play?
Yes, several hours a day, actually.
Yeah.
Usually I carry an instrument when I'm traveling, but not this time because this is a busy tour and it's not so practical.
Right.
But if I go to one place and I have to stay 2 weeks and come back, then I take an instrument.
Yeah. It probably is pretty soothing isn't it? Relaxing.
Yeah. Sometimes I borrow a guitar
from
one of our friends, you know, John Carney, Arthur Goldenhurst, Tina Leonard.
Huh.
They have guitars to lend.
I didn't know John Carney played.
Oh, yes. Yes, he plays very well.
Interesting. Now, have you ever lectured in Mark D'Souza's home there in Philly? Because he has a guitar collection he plays.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing that.
Yeah.
In this trip.
You're doing it on this trip. So you've not done that before? You're going to have
I've done it twice.
Okay. Well, then you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a great guy. He's
really
such a knowledgeable magician.
Yeah.
And he's got a beautiful house.
And a nice guitar collection.
Yeah.
and he plays and everything. Kind of cool.
You know who?
Yes, please.
You know who's got also an amazing guitar collection? It's Bob Kohler.
No, I didn't know that also.
Yes.
Huh. Now, are they signed guitars? Seems like that Mark D'Souza has signed guitars.
No, I don't think so. It's just guitars he wants to play. But Kohler has... He invented a device... For the bridge of a Telecaster guitar, and he's marketing that, and he showed it to me, and it was very interesting, something to alter the sound a little bit, only for Telecaster, Fender Telecaster guitars. Mm-hmm.
Stratocaster?
Or Telecaster.
Telecaster, okay. Yeah. There was something I saw recently that someone had invented that has a hinge on the neck of a guitar, so that way you can fold it up and put it into a smaller case, and you unfold it, and the strings are still attached. You don't take off the strings.
Well, I've seen that. My guitar teacher in Venezuela had one made like that, maybe mm-hmm. at least 40 years ago.
So it's not a new idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he didn't. He said, I don't care if it doesn't
catch on, or
if the sound is not good. I just want something to practice that is very portable.
Oh, yeah.
And the guitar one, he had it made by an amateur guitar maker that was fantastic, mm-hmm. Mr. Padron, and it ended up being a pretty good guitar. But the truth is, I don't think these things are practical. To loosen up the strings mm-hmm. and tune it again is too much work.
Yeah.
For the little trouble you save by making a smaller package. You see?
Yeah.
See what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah,
it's
I do.
Some people even say, when you travel, loosen up the string because the air pressure. I don't do that. And sometimes I arrive and the guitar is almost in tune.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't of course, if you carry it inside the cabin, but yeah. It's no big deal.
Yeah. Mm. I guess if you're a perfectionist, maybe a concert player, maybe that you might hear something that the normal ear wouldn't hear, or at least you think you do.
Yeah.
Perhaps. All right, well, good. We'll sign off, and that I'm looking forward to, again, seeing your show then later this evening.
Yeah, it's great to meet here again.
Yeah, that's right. It's a lot of fun.
In a relaxed way. Yes.
Not as rushed at all. Yeah. That's right. Well, thanks very much. That was Rafael Benatar. And for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out.